through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Happy Thursday. Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Tom Wassel, Stacy Ross here with you, Jake, on a little vacation with the family. Jake, we hope you guys are having fun. Now, we're going to get started here with a conversation. It is the bye week about the rest of the NFC West. I heard an interesting little tidbit from Mike Silver. It was when he said that not necessarily the Seahawks are the best team in the NFC West, that it could be the Rams. So here's what I want to know, Tom. You and I admitted before the show that we are both very guilty of maybe not staying quite up to date with everything happening in the NFC West. It's easy to do because you're watching your own team. You're seeing how they're progressing. Also, your own team is 5-0 for the first time in franchise history. They look phenomenal. Their offense is second overall in points scored. I mean, Russell Wilson leading the way in the MVP conversation. But, Tom, there might be another team nipping at their heels. And that is the one you weren't expecting, the Los Angeles Rams.
Well, here's the weird thing about expectations. I remember saying in the preseason that, as a prediction, that I thought the 49ers would be worse and the Rams would be better. You know how I love my Rams, right?
Jared Goff. I mean, you're obsessed with him.
I said both of those things. But I think in my gut, I didn't really believe that they would happen.
Only in your heart.
Well, in my heart and my gut. My heart and my gut are kind of the same thing. Like, my mind thought it, but my heart and my gut didn't.
Right.
Because I'm not often right about things like that.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Predicting that the 49ers would be worse and that the Rams would be better. I mean, I'm not usually right. So I guess now because I didn't really think either one of those things would be true, now that they are, do I really believe in the Rams? Do I really believe that the 49ers are done? I mean, like you said, because the Seahawks are 5-0, we haven't really given much consideration to any of the other teams in this division. It's kind of like being super wealthy. Like, when you're super wealthy,
You don't have
to care about poor people. You can choose to, but you don't have to. When you're poor, you're always looking at who's in front of you. Like, you know, the 49ers, the Cardinals, they're looking up at Seattle like, all right, we got to run those guys down.
Right,
we're up here like, it doesn't matter. You know, if we have to deal with them, we will, but it doesn't really matter. But, you know, if they lost any of those games, any of those close games, those dramatic finishes we talked about, just one game, one loss would change our perception of the Seahawks and this entire division completely.
Five
being undefeated and seeing that zero changes your perception and expectations dramatically.
Tom, 5,000% agree with you. Let's get you guys caught up to speed with the Mike Silver sound, by the way. He's got something on the Seahawks, something on the Rams. I'm going to get started with what he has to say about the Seahawks and cut number two here.
I know the defense is ranked very low, and I know that they don't have a marquee pass rusher, but in big, big moments, look what that defense has done. The two stops against the Vikings to get Russell Wilson the ball, and oh, by the way, 3 fourth-down conversions later, they pull that one out. And also the Patriots game, where Cam Newton got the Patriots right to the edge of the goal line. Look, Russell Wilson, who's already great, has elevated. I think that this is a defense that can get better. So they are really, really good now, but I think they can get better.
So Mike Silver seems to believe that two things are true, Tom. Number one, the Seahawks are obviously really good. They're 5-0. You don't accidentally get out to a 5-0 start. He also believes, in cut number one here, that the Rams might end up being the best team in the NFC.
Yeah, Steve, I think when all is said and done, the Rams may end up being the best team in the NFC. I mean, obviously, they got to get through the Seahawks, too. But, You're right about Jared Goff. Sean McVay, really late last season, starting with that big game they almost pulled out against the 49ers at Levi's, started changing the offense, diversifying. Brandon Staley has energized that defense. They've got two stars, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, and a lot of people that guys haven't heard of out there, but they're playing pretty well on defense. The offense is red hot, and do not sleep on this Rams team. They are one bad call away from being undefeated, lost after a great comeback against the Bills. People are saying Josh Allen should be in the MVP conversation. If that's true, then Jared Goff should absolutely be there too.
Now, Russell Wilson, No, Tom, don't feel validated by this. Don't let this make you feel validated. Oh, God. If anyone needs to know, Tom loves Jared Goff almost as much as Jake hates Troy Aikman. I mean, I don't know any more like opposite feelings, but strong feelings that you two have about quarterbacks. But you
There's
love Jared Goff.
About him.
Now, hear me out.
About him.
Tom, listen to how Jared Goff has been so far. He had a tough week one, right? We're not going to lie. Tough week one. But since then, he's got collectively 8 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, 71.7% completion, which is just under Russell Wilson's number, and 4 consecutive games with a 100-plus passer rating. Should he be leading the MVP conversation? No, but he is much better this year than he was last year, at least more consistent over the last couple weeks here. 2 more stats I want to read you, Tom. Tell me if this makes you nervous. I need someone to help me feel a little bit calm here. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here's an offensive stat. The Rams are completing 9 yards per pass attempt, which leads the league. Seattle's number 2, right behind them at 8.9, but the Rams' offense is still showing that it can be explosive and that the receivers are serious threats, all right? That's what that tells me. Here's the stat that makes me a little squeamish. This is defense. The Rams' defense have given up the 5th fewest passing yards, just 939 in the league. Seattle's defense has given up 1,852. Overall, I think Seattle's the better team. You're 5-0. I know the Rams are only one game behind you, and it was a loss to a tough AFC team. I know that. I'm not saying the Rams are going to surpass the Seahawks. I'm saying I'm surprised that the Rams are the ones right behind the Seahawks here. I thought they'd be in fourth place in the division, but I think that the NFC West continues to be tough. This is a tough gauntlet, and I am certainly keeping my eyes on them, Tom, in a way that I haven't before.
You know, you bring up the stat there about the Rams. What did you say, 5th best defense in terms of passing yards allowed?
Yes.
And about 1,000 yards better than the Seahawks? Let me put it to you this way in comparing those two teams. If you sacrificed a little bit of Russell Wilson's greatness to improve your defense, you basically get the Los Angeles Rams.
No,
like if you take away
a
little bit of Russell Wilson, you get Jared Goff. But if you add that greatness to the defense, that little bit, you get an improved defense. What would you rather have? More balance, which is what the Rams have.
Yeah.
Or 2 extremes.
I would rather,
which is what the Seahawks have.
I would rather have 2 extremes right now because you're 5-0 with 2 extremes versus 4-1 with that. I think the difference is that your offense has someone at quarterback that is a once in a lifetime talent for your organization. I would rather have that 10 times over than someone who, yeah, he's a franchise quarterback, but I'm not nearly as confident in a tie game with Jared Goff having the ball with less than 2 minutes remaining and 94 yards to go versus with Russell Wilson. I was like, there's a shot here. On 4th and 6, game on the line, I thought, there's a shot here. This might really happen. I mean, I think that I wouldn't trade that kind of confidence for not quite knowing what's going to happen, especially knowing that that's the player that's tied to your organization for 10, 15 years, right? The defense could get better in a year or two. The quarterback situation, you're stuck with, unless he develops and gets better. What I'll also say, I love the question, Tom, but I think that Seattle's defense has stars. So it's like, imagine.
That's the puzzling thing
about it. It is. Imagine if in the preseason I was like, okay, Tom, hear me out. How would you feel about having Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams on the same defense? How would you, hypothetically, like, wouldn't that make them, like, take them to the next level? And you'd be like, absolutely. Well, maybe not. I mean, you weren't quite sure. But
that's why we kept calling it the LOB 2.0 or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? And that just hasn't materialized. And I'm wondering if it ever can. I mean, the names are there. I don't think everybody needs to be an A-level player for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And you got Diggs and Adams. Griffin is a B. I mean, and I don't think it's all Trey Flowers' fault, by the way. You know, I mean, their offenses are making plays on the field in areas other than where Trey Flowers is. It's not his fault. It's not Griffin's fault either. It's just that for whatever reason, like, you know, and I meant to ask Jake this, and maybe we could ask Wyman this. Mm-hmm. Dave Wyman's going to come on at 1 o'clock. All those passes to Adam Thielen in the second half when that offense really had it working, they seemed to be of the exact same variety. Like, they were about 8 or 9 yards in front of the line of scrimmage, and they were about a yard or two behind or in front of, I guess, depending on how you look at it, every Seahawk defender. Like, Thielen was positioned in such a way that the Seahawks just couldn't figure out where he was going to stop. Mm. And yet, it seemed to be the same play over and over and over. Why can they? Is that the player not adjusting, or is it that they're just coached to defend a certain way? So keep the play in front of you. Don't go for the, I mean, Pete Carroll always coaches go for the ball, go for the ball, go for the ball. But are they afraid at times to do that? Are guys who are younger, like an Amadi or Neal or Flowers, afraid to just go for it because they're afraid, if I screw up, they're going to, you know, the receiver's going to get behind me?
Which is the cardinal sin of Pete Carroll's defense, to get beat over the top. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that's the problem. It's just something that jumped out to me. Maybe that's what they're coached to do.
Let's talk about it. I like that question for Dave. Yeah. We'll bring that up with Dave Wyman. He'll be joining us at 1 p.m. Two other teams that obviously I'm going to get to real quick before we jump into three questions. Tom, tell me how you feel about the Arizona Cardinals and San Francisco 49ers right now. Arizona at 3-2, 49ers at 2-3. I should also mention that the Rams and the 49ers will be facing off this Sunday night.
I said a second ago that the Rams, or I predicted the 49ers would be worse, but did I think that they would be done by week 5? Problem is that they have a brutal schedule coming up. I mean, they're already injured beyond belief. Jimmy Garoppolo got benched last week because his coach felt like he needed to protect him because of that injury. He couldn't get anything on his throws, so he had to take him out of the game. I mean, I wondered aloud whether that would ever happen with Russell Wilson. But, I mean, if you look at their schedule, they just lost to Miami. Rams at New England, at Seattle, Green Bay at New Orleans, at Rams, Buffalo, and then Washington, Dallas. I mean, they might already be out of it. I mean, it would be seriously impressive if they went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If over their next 7 games, if they went 3-4. Like, that would be impressive.
Which would put them at 5 wins. It's crazy.
I know. It would put them at 5-7, I guess. And it would, I don't know if they'd still be in the hunt at that point for a playoff spot, even with 7 teams getting in. But that would be impressive that they managed to pull those games off. So if you're asking me right now if I think they're done, yes. Mm. Does that mean that they could still beat Seattle, though? Yes. Mm. Head-to-head? Absolutely. Especially, you know, no crowd. I think that no crowd at CenturyLink, you start to hear these coordinators talking about how different it is. I think it's a really big deal. I really do.
For defenses?
I mean, they're 5-0. If they ended up, I'm sorry, go ahead.
For defenses or for the whole
team? Yeah. I think they need, I mean, if they ended up going 14-2 and say undefeated at home in a year where they didn't have that crowd, that would be really weird. Because they haven't been that great at home in recent years. Not as great as they were several years ago.
And just kind of a bummer.
It would be very strange if it would happen.
Kind of a bummer. There's been so many moments where I've thought, oh, if only fans were here for that run, or oh, if only fans were here for that touchdown. I mean, it would have been rocking and rolling. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Tom Wassel, Stacey Ross here. We're doing a check-in on the NFC West. I said that the Rams are looking a little bit scary here after having a down year in 2019. I have to say, lots of trash talk coming in from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. Congratulations on the Rams playing the NFC East. You know what, guys? The Rams defense is still scaring me a little bit, but I'm very proud of the trash talk. I'm proud of you guys right now. All right, let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Whoever texted that in is totally
fair.
Right. The only losses to a good team, the Bills. And I'm not even
Who were walloped by the Titans, who, granted, had 2 weeks off to practice.
Right. I mean, the Seahawks, at the very least, had impressive wins. I can't deny that. All right. So speaking of the Rams and 49ers, like you said, they play each other this Sunday night. Who should we be rooting for?
I am going 49ers. I really had to think about it because here's the benefit. You can either have the 49ers win and push the Rams a little further back to give Seattle a little bit more of a head start here. Or you could have the Rams win and just help bury the 49ers. Get them out of the conversation so it becomes a little bit more of a two-man race. Ultimately, I'm going with 49ers. It feels weird to say. I think it's in Seattle's best interest to root for the 49ers here because the further away you get the Rams away from you, the better. And the 49ers, they have two wins right now. Again, I think that the NFC West as a whole, outside of Seattle, still a sleeping giant to me. Like, I think that any of these teams can take off at any moment. They've all got so much talent, even with these injuries. But I would rather have the Rams at 4-2 and Seattle at 5-0 heading out of the bye than have the Rams sitting here at 5-1.
I think that most Seahawk fans agree with you, and I agree with you, too. Thing is, since I'm such a Jared Goff fan, if I decide to sit down and watch that game, it's going to be really tough for me to sit there and watch, even knowing
you have to do
that
it,
it's in
Tom.
The Seahawks' best interest for the 49ers to win. I can't deny my gut and my heart. I can't deny them.
I'll allow it. I'll let you cheer for the Rams tonight. It'll make for a friendly wager when we get our text thread going for the game.
Okay, fair enough. He just throws such a beautiful defense.
All right, Tom. All right.
Next.
Number two.
We were talking about Bruce Irvin a lot yesterday because poor guy's trying to heal. He's just sitting there with not much better to do but rehab and get on Twitter.
I love it.
And it got me wondering, you know, he was so fired up to be here. Do you think that over the course of the season that Bruce Irvin really would have impacted the defense in a significant way?
Yes. There were times, particularly in weeks 1 and 2, when I was taking notes, and especially for some stuffed runs, I would just write 51, 51, 51. I mean, I think he was a big part of how good that run defense was. And I know people were saying, well, the Seahawks have faced like 22 carries on average from opposing offenses, so they're not really being tested against the run. I think that that was part of the reality, but I think another part of it was that your linebackers, as a whole with Bruce Irvin in there, were really solid against the run too, and I think it hurt missing him, especially against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, look, they brought him in for a reason. Would he have had an impact? I mean, just ask yourself right now, with the way the defense is playing and what they have on that front four, would you rather have Bruce Irvin or not have him?
I think
the answer is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Like, even if you say, all right, I don't think his impact was going to be that significant, you'd probably still, at the very least, you'd like to have him even for depth, like even if he turned out not to be a starter. And I think he probably would have remained a starter. So I think the answer is yes there.
What if
he would have had some kind of impact?
What if the thing about being in week 5, like there's times in an NFL season, say it gets to week 11 or 12, where you look back and you think, that was this same year? Like that happened a lot. Was it 2 years ago when they had Brandon Marshall for weeks like 1 through 4 or whatever? When it got to the end of that season, I would think like, oh my gosh, Brandon Marshall was on this team. That feels like it was 4 years ago. I wonder if we're going to get to a point in this season, fingers crossed, where you look at, say, play from Jordan Brooks or someone contributing and you think, man, like, remember when we were wondering, like, what this guy would look like? I hope that we get to that point. I hope it's, you know, week 9, 10, 11, and Jordan Brooks is surprising us or Alton Robinson is surprising us. And we're right. looking back thinking, do you remember when we were doing our rookie grades in the bye week, Tom, and we were wondering what this would look like? That'd be ideal.
Yeah, it seemed like it was so long ago. It's funny. There were guys during the early part of Pete and Russell being here. There were guys like Sidney Rice and Zach Miller, remember the tight end?
Uh-huh.
Like I would, both of whom got hurt, I think in different years, but I would always have so much trouble remembering, okay, wait, was Zach Miller on the 2012, 13, and 14 teams? Wait, when did Sidney Rice get hurt? Wait, was Braylon Edwards here, or was that Kellen Winslow?
Or like, was it just a dream?
Things like that happen. It's weird. Yeah, it's like, well, what team was I even watching there?
All right.
Next.
Number three.
We talk so much about how we, I guess, feel sympathetic for a guy like Russell Wilson because he doesn't receive MVP votes and he's underappreciated for whatever reason. But then there's Pete Carroll. You know, the guy that built this whole thing and the guy who, you know, although he's the oldest coach in the league, he might be around for a couple more years, he might not. We'll see. Who's the more sentimental figure? Like, if they win the Super Bowl, who deserves to hoist that trophy first, Pete or Russ?
I think it's, well, two different things for me. I don't necessarily connect the two. I think Russell Wilson should be hoisting that trophy first, especially if he continues to play the way he's been playing. I mean, he's taking you there. I think Pete Carroll is the more sentimental figure. I don't know why. It might be because he's, you know, he's older, he's the coach, he's just been unwavering in this kind of optimism that he has that I think there's a bit of a soft spot in people's hearts for that kind of coach, like a player-friendly coach. So I'm going with Pete Carroll for more sentimental between the two.
Yeah, the way he started his career as a head coach with the Jets, and he went, you know, had a terrible time there. Then he gets hired by the Patriots, actually does okay, makes the playoffs twice, wins a playoff game, but is doing it with a Bill Parcells team that had just gone to the Super Bowl, and then they get rid of him, and Belichick comes in, and he's the greatest of all time. He's out of the NFL. Then he has the USC thing happen, which is great, but then he comes back to the NFL. You know, a lot of people think he's running away from the USC thing. And then he, of course, suffers that terrible loss the way he did, you know, with that play call that he bears some responsibility for. I think to end his career with one more Super Bowl win would really tie it all together. He doesn't need it to validate that reputation, but it would be nice to get it. Whereas Russell's just got more time. I think he's going to – I think by the time Russell hangs it up, there's not going to be any question as to who he was.
Yep. Should we save this next one for Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That way we can get texters involved. I already have my answer. I'm set. I'm fired up for mine. What is your least favorite sports debate of all time? Now, we love debating sports. We are a talk sports station. But when you hear this debate, you're like, I'm done. I'm so tired of this. It is either so obviously one side that's the answer, or you're just done hearing it. We're going to talk about that with Mike Salk next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, before I throw to you, I have to let the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line know I asked you guys to text in 710-710 about your least favorite sports debate of all time. Not just one you're annoyed with. I want to know one that you hate. It gets under your skin. It makes you mad. I already have mine figured out. Tom has his. Mike, I'm going to go to you first. Your least favorite sports debate of all time.
All right. There's a few that sort of pop to mind. Right. One is, will Ben Roethlisberger play this weekend? That's always a debate for the ages. Is he too hurt? Yeah. Is he going to drag his limping body out there
We've
once
had it
again?
Too many times.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
Does
done
he
with
still
that.
Have
one.
An elbow.
Why don't you guys talk about soccer? Is another debate that I have no interest in. I'm all set. I don't want to talk about soccer, and I don't want to talk about why I don't want to talk about soccer. So those two are probably That's what comes to mind.
Now, have
first.
You seen Ted Lasso on Apple TV? Because
no.
That show's fantastic. It's so good. It's about a football coach.
Is that the one where Sudeikis is a
yes,
football coach?
It's based on a series of NBC commercials where he's this, like, presumably SEC type coach that goes over to coach a Premier League team. And it's so good. That's all.
All right. I've heard it's good.
Tom, I want to hear yours. We held it off until you joined us.
Yeah. Not that it isn't interesting, but I don't like having the paying college athletes debate. Here's why. It oftentimes turns nasty because your perspective on that issue sometimes is a result of who you are and how you view the world almost politically. And it requires, I think, some degree of virtue signaling on either side. And because of that, it tends to get very personal and nasty quickly. And that's not an area that I enjoy going.
That's fair.
How about anything? I agree with that, Tom, by the way, every sentence of that. What about anything involving officials, calls, or...
See, I normally like this.
Oh, I don't care. If you should have won the game. I'm sorry the ref. I'm sorry the ump. I'm sorry somebody screwed you on a call. You should have won the game. You should have been ahead by enough for that not to matter. That's the way it goes. If you leave it up to chance, then sometimes that's going to happen. So I tend to tune out on the 2005 Seahawks. Now, I know there were bad calls. I'm not arguing that the calls were good. I just tend to tune out. Like, it's a debate and a conversation that over time I generally lose interest in. And I'll say, I also tend to lose interest in, you know, should we have robo-umps in baseball? I don't care that much. Bring in the robo-umps. Don't bring them in. Like, I would prefer that they didn't have them.
You don't worry about human jobs, Salk?
I mean, a few. I would prefer that they have human umps. I wouldn't mind if they got rid of a couple of the specific ones. But I like human umps. But if they went to robo-umps, like, okay, whatever. Like, I can't get too worked up about that.
I only want robo-umps if it is a cartoon Jetson-style robot that is making the calls. Otherwise, I
Astro.
I don't care. Mine was the Andrew Luck versus Russell Wilson debate. Here's why I don't like it. Because I cannot have a conversation or debate with two different types of logic. You can make the debate that Russell Wilson is the better quarterback from anyone from his class based on accomplishments. Right? Super Bowl winner, went to another Super Bowl, playing like an MVP, winning as quarterback through his first 8-9 seasons, however much. Andrew Luck is all potential based because he never met any of those expectations because he was always injured. The team didn't really build around him, didn't protect him enough. And he ended up walking away from the game because he didn't want to face a million more injuries. It's completely understandable. He had other priorities in life. But what's unfortunate is that the potential was there. He could have been one of the best quarterbacks based only on potential, but there's no way for me to prove that wrong, which is why I hate that argument.
There are NFL executives today who would take Andrew Luck over Russell Wilson.
Right, and I feel like it's just a way to say, well, I was never proven wrong about Andrew Luck, so therefore I can still be right about him. And I feel like that's just a cop-out. Like, at some point, you need to take someone's production over potential. Just accept it.
It is interesting, though, that a lot of these great debates tend to get decided eventually. Like, for years.
But when's it going to be decided about Andrew Luck?
Well, that one probably. Decided. I mean, maybe Russell will make it impossible to say that it's Andrew Luck at some point. At some point, Russell has five
Not
Super
for
Bowls.
Gale Brandt.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning thing eventually got decided. Yeah, Peyton was great. And for a long time, there was a pretty good debate about, oh, who's better, Brady or Manning. But now that you look back on it, and Brady's not even done with his career yet, but when this is done, it's not a debate anymore. Brady is the greatest of all time, and Peyton Manning was clearly number two to Brady during the time they played together. So sometimes enough time and distance and experience will end some of these debates.
We asked you guys what your least favorite sports debate was. Most popular answer from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, MJ versus LeBron. Most popular answer.
Well, yeah. Can I say something about that one real quick?
Yes.
The reason why, and by the way, that's the reason why we're having this conversation. Stacey and I were prepping, and we had what was FS1 or something on in the background, and we heard them talking about that. And I said, I'm like, are they talking MJ LeBron? Now, I know why they're doing it, because LeBron just won another championship. So it's, you know, it's high time we you know, dust that argument off. But, like, whether you're a sports talk radio host or you're just a fan or you're a player, Like, don't you just get sick of talking about it sometimes? I mean, look, I know we talk about the Seahawks every single day, but we try to bring you at least some variation on the same topic or what's current or whatever, just to try to keep it fresh. Like, yeah. I'm not sick of talking about the NFC West because we really haven't talked about it.
Yeah, but hasn't this been updated now, Tom? I mean, don't they get a week of it after LeBron wins now that
one
you can
week.
Add another
That's
championship
it. One
to
week.
It? You
got
to bring it back
you get
a
one
little
week.
Bit. I'm with you, though, that I find it frustrating to compare eras all the time. And whether it's MJ LeBron or you do it in baseball, I mean, anytime you're trying to compare, you know, how do the Bulls do against the old Celtics teams or whatever, like, I find those debates to be pretty, you know, there's no way to solve them, right?
Mm-hmm. This hour,
but
Tom
it's interesting to think about how Babe Ruth would have done against, say, an African American or Latino pitcher.
Yes, but I find it hard to say who was better, Babe Ruth or Barry Bonds. Like,
that's dumb,
right?
And
like,
go ahead.
This hour of Tom Jenkins. Thank you. This hour of Tom Jenkins, Stacy, is brought to you by the Pro Club. Tom Wassel and Stacy Ross here talking to Mike Salk. I want to touch back on the NFC West conversation that Tom and I were having so we can get a third opinion in here. Tom and I both admitted, safe space here, vulnerable, just between the three of us right now, that we weren't paying close attention to the Rams because I think we both thought, I know Tom's obsessed with Jared Goff for some reason.
It's a sexy offense, right?
Yeah, that's what he says. He says it's
sexual
offense.
Excuse me.
I think that we both thought that the Rams would be fourth in the division. They just were really struggling with the offensive line last year, blah, blah, blah. Turns out they're right behind the Seahawks. So when you look at the NFC West, it seems obvious to say, are they the team you have their eyes on? But are they the one that you think is going to stay there? Or do you expect the 49ers to catch up?
Yeah, no, I think for this year, the Rams are going to be the team you've got to watch for. Cardinals have defensive problems. They're not a bad team, but I think they've got defense issues. And San Francisco, I think, is just suffering that post-Super Bowl loss hangover that you saw with the Rams last year. Do I think the 49er dynasty here is done? No, I think this team will still be good for the next few years. Do I think that they are probably in trouble this year? Yeah, and that's why the Rams had me a little nervous at the beginning of the season. Maybe I was watching a little bit more closely, and it's not a, you know. I just think that after teams lose the Super Bowl, they tend to go downhill. We've seen it now with the Falcons, the Panthers, the Niners this year, the Rams. It's really hard to sustain that level of positive play right after a Super Bowl loss. Pete winning and as much as he did in 2015 is, to me, his greatest year of coaching, and he should probably have won Coach of the Year that year more than any other. But I'm not surprised to see a talented team and a team that's got as much talent on both sides of the football as the Rams do, with a pretty good coach in Sean McVay. I'm not surprised to see them bounce back after the off year last year and find a way without having the extra mileage on them because of the playoff run, without having the mental issues of the Super Bowl loss so fresh, and with some new blood that they've brought in, but still with Aaron Donald and that offense. Yeah, I think they're a pretty formidable opponent. Now, I don't know that they're a great team. I don't know if they're better than the Seahawks, but they're certainly someone to take seriously.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him on the weekly Brock and Salk podcast. New episodes drop Tuesday nights, and you can always hear him every day at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Thanks, Mike.
I'm ready for Bold Take Friday tomorrow. Let's go.
Well, you better. You have several hours to prepare, so don't disappoint us. Now that I know
hours that
you're looking forward to it, don't let us down.
See ya.
At 5-0 with Russell Wilson playing out of his mind, has the 2020 season become Super Bowl or bust? We'll talk about that next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
The Seattle Seahawks have entered their bye week 5-0 for the first time in franchise history. You've heard it a million times. I'm probably still going to say it a couple more times because it just sounds good, you guys. Russell Wilson playing like an MVP. So here's the question. Now, I don't know that I would have said yes to this question at the beginning of the season, but after five wins, with Russell Wilson leading the league in touchdowns by a lot, is 2020, Tom, a Super Bowl or bust season? And if it's not, does it ever get to that point? Oh, all right. Curtis, I might have to throw to you for
okay.
this one. Curtis, has 2020 become a Super Bowl or bust season?
Not yet, but if they get to 7-0, 8-0... then yes, it absolutely becomes a Super Bowl or bust season, because at that point, half of your season is already done and you're picking up wins every single week. At that point, the road ahead of you becomes even easier. The road to a first round bye is even easier. That's why I think it becomes a Super Bowl or bust scenario if they do get a couple more wins here over the next few weeks.
Am I back?
You're back.
You're back, Tom.
Okay, you're back just in time. Same question. Right. We're looking at whether or not Super Bowl or bust is a thing that we're thinking now at 5-0, or whether or not, you know, hey, we aren't thinking Super Bowl or bust yet, but what if they get to 8-0? That's what Curtis said. If you get to 8-0, you've been undefeated for half your season, you're on a roll, you're probably leading the NFC. I mean,
you know, I guess if you look at this season in a vacuum, the better they get, the better any team gets, the more disappointing it's going to be if they don't win the Super Bowl. But a lot of the times when you say, well, it's Super Bowl or bust, or it's World Series or bust, what you mean is we're in win-now mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've got to win now because our window's closing. I don't think their window's closing. Like, Russell Wilson, as long as he stays healthy, that notwithstanding, is going to be great for, like, the next 5 years. DK Metcalf's going to be great for the next 5 years. Tyler Lockett, probably the same thing. Mm-hmm. And do you think that the defense is going to be worse than they are now, next year, and the year after?
It'll be hard.
So I think that their window, in a way, has, like, reopened over the last 2 years. Or it's opened wider, depending on how you want to look at it. So if they go 15-1 or something, and or, like, the better your record, the more upset you're going to be if they don't at least make it to the Super Bowl. But I think that they're going to have a bunch of chances to get there. So it's not like if they, you know, they lose in the divisional round, we're going to go into the offseason like, uh-oh, we've got to draft another quarterback now because so-and-so is going to leave. You know, I think we're going to be okay.
I think there's going to be plenty of concern, though, because they haven't been to the conference championship since 2014 or since the game against Green Bay, technically in 2015. They have most of the time just kind of fallen out of the wild card round, but for the most part, we've been seeing them kind of, you know, get to the divisional round and then struggle there and lose to another opponent. I think that with the way this season has started, specifically being one that's offense heavy, where the ball is in Wilson's hands literally more often. They're passing almost 61% of the time, which is significantly more than they did in 2018 when they passed for, like, I don't know, 47% of the time. People saw this as being the key to getting past that. If you give the ball to your best player, Russell Wilson, that's the key to getting back to an NFC championship. And that's why I think if you don't get to the NFC championship, people will think, like, well, what happened? I mean, is it just the defense? I mean, you did the thing. You did the thing that, you know, we all thought would work, and now it hasn't happened. Why is it a mistake?
That's a mistake, though. It's a mistake to think that changing the formula, you can't force results. The only thing you can do is give yourself and your team a better opportunity. Like, they're better set up right now to get out of the divisional round, because if they end up with a better record, they're probably going to have an extra home game. If they're the one seed, they'll have it the whole way through. If they're the two, they'll have it for at least two games. So let Russ cook. If it gets them that, at least, it gives them a better opportunity. But you can't, there's nothing you can do in your preparation to force that result, right? I mean, you can still lose a game in the second round, even if you come in there with a better team than you have the past couple times with, like, you know, a 10-6 team or an 11-5 team or whatever it is. So you got to be careful with that.
I mean, we saw it happen with both the New England Patriots last year and the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson was your MVP of the league. They looked unstoppable on offense. They were a dynamic offense. And then they fell out of that first round in their, I believe, the divisional game.
Their first round.
I mean, I don't know. There was a good question on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line about what does or bust mean? Define bust. Like, is it Super Bowl or someone gets fired? No, I don't think that's or bust here. I think it's just, what are the expectations this season?
Yeah,
it's
Super Bowl or massive disappointment.
Right, exactly. I don't think it's Super Bowl, but if they get to, like, let's say they get to, like Curtis said, 8-0, 9-0, or 10-1. I think you start to think this has been their best record since the NFC Championship. They don't have a reason not to get back there. And this is all hinging on the success of the defense, right? Because the defense is most likely going to be the bit that is the reason you don't get there. When I read that stat about the Rams earlier, that's concerning to me. The fact that you've allowed almost 1,000 more passing yards from opposing offenses than have the LA Rams, who aren't even the best defense against the pass. So most likely, yeah, Russell Wilson could make a mistake. The offense could make a mistake. But if there's going to be something that keeps you from there, it's your defense. I know this, but I think that my expectations have changed. Like, it has become the NFC Championship. It feels like there's, outside of that defense, no excuse right now that you couldn't get there. That is in within your control. Injuries are obviously outside of your control.
Yeah, I mean, we were saying NFC Championship, you know, before the season, because that's, like you said, that's not where they've been lately. And the better they get, I mean, I guess when the, when success, when your goal, let's say it's getting to the conference championship, when that becomes more likely than not, where they're like, they're no longer surmounting that obstacle. Like, if you're in a situation where you're 10-0, the likelihood of you getting to the conference championship is higher than not getting there. And so to fall short of that is massive disappointment. That's what bust is. When the thing that's supposed to happen doesn't happen. Like, if you're 10-6 and you're a wild card team and you make a run to the Super Bowl, you're going to be disappointed if you lose it. But your expectation before the season, or at least probably mid-season, wasn't that you were the best team in the league. So the word bust never entered into the equation. But the better you are, the more likely, I mean, the higher the disappointment it's going to be.
So if you make off-season moves, particularly on defense, then does 2021 become that season? Because then those expectations are there. Say that they don't make it to the conference or they lose in the conference round. I know I'm jumping, you know, the gun here and getting too far ahead. Knock on wood for anyone that's nervous. But say that they don't make it this year. Your offense finished as one of the better offenses in the league. And that's an important thing to note, too. They aren't 5-0 by accident. I know the defense is bad. I'm seeing some texts saying, like, hey, you're putting the cart before the horse. The defense isn't good. 4-2-5, you make a good point. I think that the thing is, the offense is that good. The offense is really, really good. They deserve to be in the top of those power rankings we see all over NFL.com and ESPN. Yeah. So there's a reason they're part of that conversation. But, Tom, if the expectation is, say, then, at the beginning of next year, that the offense is going to be like this, then I think it does become a Super Bowl or bust kind of conversation.
If you think the off, wait, you say if the offense is going to be the same.
The offense is better this year, functioning better than I thought they would be. So presumably this is the plan moving forward, right? So if in this offseason they acquire a defensive star, or make a big draft pick or trade or something, does your opinion of 2021 change? Like, has your opinion of 21 already changed?
Yeah, let's say they acquire a big free agent. And, you know, they've spent money, so that's always an issue. And that takes them from being a below-average defense to an above that, like a top 10 or something like that. You don't know how long they're going to be top 10 for, even with that free agent. Like, you can have the same personnel 1 year as the last, and you can make, you know, have drastic changes. Weird things happen. So, yeah, if they end up performing that well on both sides of the ball, then you really got to win it, because there's no telling when you're going to be that balanced again, that elite on both sides. From the 509, if Jake is listening, he's screaming at the radio right now, Tom.
Typical
you
Jake.
You can't force results, but you can take advantage of the rules that favor passing. I mean, isn't that kind of what I'm saying? Like, you can give yourself the best opportunity to win? That's exactly what I said.
I don't think that's what Jake would be screaming at.
He's not screaming at all.
He's a chill dude, man. Jake's not screaming right now. All right, Dave Wyman joins us next. We're going to ask him Tom's question about whether or not the defense is playing safe, how they're, you know, kind of giving up so many yards, what goes into that. He'll be joining us next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.